And Scrum, the commander's intent of the sprint, is the sprint goal. And that provides this flexibility and this autonomy, like to make decisions, to make changes as you learn and discover more. Of course, you can add 10 tickets to the sprint and you can say, we commit to finishing these 10 tickets. The big problem is when you do complex work, some of those tickets are going to be twice as big than you expected. And what you often see, the velocity is 50, so we're going to plan 50. But it means you have no flexibility, right? Because in the end of the day, some of the tickets are actually not 5 story points, they're actually 13 story points. So the question becomes, what do you want? Do you want to have control over what gets finished or not? With the sprint goal, you basically say, this is the one thing that matters most. If stuff is more complicated than expected, this is what we're going to be focusing on. The other stuff is stretch goals. In military warfare, there's this concept of friction. So in war, there's a lot of friction, which means your plans are not going to go as expected. Your actions, if you, for example, tell people to advance, they're not going to do it because they're scared, for example. And even if they do everything as expected, you cannot predict what the enemy does. So it's not going to have the expected results. That's the nature of complex work. You cannot predict all the steps.
You are writing a book on sprint goals right now. How could you write a book on such a subject that seems so small?
It seems like a very small topic, right? But when you dig deeper, it actually isn't. That what keeps coming back in every event is the sprint goal. If you leave it out, Scrum kind of becomes hollow and it kind of loses its heartbeat.
Hi, I'm Maria and this is the Agile State of Mind. Welcome. Today, I have something special for you guys. I have with me Martin Daimlein. Hi, Martin. I'm so
Hello.
Excited to have you with me.
I'm also super excited to be here. We finally get to do this.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing because Martin and I, we know each other almost from the beginning of my channel. And this is the first time that we actually talk, right?
Correct. Apart from exchanging some messages, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I think we have been like a pen friend by this time. And we met with Serious Scrum. I started to write for Serious Scrum publication, and that was a great start also for my channel. And right now, just for those of you who don't know Martin, which I suppose there are not many of those, Martin is a product management leader. And a celebrity, I could say, or maybe better said, a product influencer. You can find him on LinkedIn here. And he has over 66,000 followers on Medium, because you used to be a very prolific writer on Medium, right?
Used to be. I like how you phrase that, but it's true. It's absolutely true.
Yeah. And now you kind of moved to LinkedIn, right? Where you also have a lot of followers right now. And you write mostly about product management. I love your articles, actually, because they are very informative, but they also have stories. They tell a story. You give a lot of examples and analogies or metaphors to better understand what is described, which really hits the mark. You know, it really helps to understand why something is a problem and how we can solve it. And you specialize in the sprint goal topic,
correct?
Right?
Correct.
And that's actually something interesting because you are writing a book on sprint goals right now. And that's why I wanted to talk to you, because I think I haven't even touched the subject of sprint goals in my videos yet. I was talking about all things Scrum apart from that one. I have a lot of questions about sprint goals. And I would like to understand today, first one, like, how could you write a book on such a subject that seems so small? That's probably something you get a lot.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. So it seems like a very small topic, right? And because you're talking about sprint goals, it seems such a small facet of Scrum. But when you dig deeper, it actually isn't, right? And let me give you an example. So now I'm going to use another analogy, right? So I'm a classical trained musician, well, an amateur. I never went to like conservatories. I can play the piano. So that's why I use a lot of musical examples. So for example, the movie Jaws, right? There's this theme for the shark, which keeps on coming back. Doo-doo, doo-doo. It's called a leitmotif in German. It's like a leading motif. So it keeps coming back. You also have it in Harry Potter. You also have it in Star Wars. If in Scrum, that what keeps coming back in every event is the sprint goal. So the daily Scrum is to optimize ability to achieve the sprint goal. And in the retrospective, you reflect on, hey, did we achieve the sprint goal? So literally every Scrum event is somehow related to the sprint goal. And as well, if you think about it, what is the reason for canceling the sprint? that's when the sprint goal becomes obsolete. So actually, it's intertwined with every Scrum event. And if you leave it out, then Scrum kind of becomes hollow, right? So it's not the same thing. And it kind of loses its heartbeat. As it says, like, sprints are the heart of Scrum. And I would say, without the sprint goal, you don't have a heartbeat. Like, that heart stops working. So
that's interesting. And yet, look at all those teams that they supposedly do Scrum and they don't use sprint goals at all.
Yeah, I would argue it's the majority of teams, right? So you're absolutely right. And that's what's really surprising to me. So maybe to provide a bit of context, right? So when you do Scrum, like, the kind of the assumption is you're doing complex work, which means before you start, you don't know enough. You don't know everything there is to know. So you need to discover what's going on. You need to discover what you don't know. So the problem is, if you don't know everything and you need to make changes, if you don't know what you're trying to achieve, then the only option you have is to follow the plan. The plan becomes the objective, right? So that's what you see with these teams. Like, they make a plan, everything is in there, and then the sprint starts. Reality is different, which is supposed to happen because we're doing complex work. We don't know everything. And then what do? You go to the product owner immediately. Like, what should we do? Like, this ticket takes twice as long or three times as long. Well, if you have sprint goals and you understand this is the most important thing, this we're trying to achieve, you have flexibility, the team can make changes. They're empowered, basically. At the core of Scrum, empowered teams. If you don't know what you're trying to achieve, how can you be empowered?
Yeah, I agree. And that's why, all in all, I love a goal, you know, an objective for the teams. It doesn't have to be like strictly sprint goal, but have a goal and understand what's in there. So I would like to understand, what if you could explain, like, what really is a sprint goal?
Yeah, so basically, so now I'm going to make a comparison to warfare, and I don't want to glorify war in any way, especially with the whole situation in Ukraine, but it's a good way of explaining it, right? So if you look at military warfare, what they actually do is, whenever there's a mission, there is something which they call the commander's intent of a mission. And it basically tells the troops, what are we trying to achieve here and why does it matter? Like, what is the objective? And especially in warfare, right? Like, people are under incredible stress, they're scared. So people are going to behave differently than expected. Stuff will just not go as expected. That's basically, so that's why every mission has this commander's intent. So everybody understands. So for D-Day, for example, as we all know, the goal was to secure, like, important junctions so they could advance inland. So they would understand, this is what we're trying to achieve so that we can get our people to advance on the land. So that also means that if all the bridges, you know, had been exploded or destroyed, then the mission would become obsolete. Like, what do we do then, right? So this is very important. And in the army, they realize that, because when stuff goes differently than expected, you need to know how can we change our plans? What do we need to do now? And that's what the commander's intent provides. And in Scrum, the commander's intent of the sprint is the sprint goal. And that provides this flexibility and this like autonomy, like, to make decisions, to make changes as you learn and discover more.
I love it that you mentioned that, because I was actually in between two questions, whether what's a sprint goal, and I learned about commander's intent from your article.
Yeah.
So they both came together, and I really recommend everyone who haven't read the article from Martin that's called "The Only Thing That Matters When Planning a Sprint." I will link it in the description below. It's great article. I think it was like your star article, right?
Yeah, no, actually, it's funny. It's probably my second most. My most popular one is on story points, and it's not even close. Like, I don't know why, but apparently there's a lot.
Those things that people struggle most with, right? Those are, in the end, I realized as well that, look at a Scrum guide, the story points are not even there. And on sprint goal, you have just a few lines, probably. That's why it's like, okay, it is there, we should do it, but who cares? Yeah. I don't know even how. And so that's why I guess people look for that stuff that complements what's in Scrum guide. But what you said, yeah, I would like to understand, you know, I work with a lot of teams. I have been working with a lot of teams all the time. And I really, sometimes I'm the person that brings sprint goal to the team. They have never worked with it. And we have a lot of struggles, even though it's already better to have like, okay, this is, but I have so many struggles that I would like your help with them. So first one is that, okay, we start with a goal. It's bad, but it is. Or like, let's say goals. It never is one goal. It's a list of tasks, let's say. And then we go to, and what I do, I try to do like walk the board in this daily scrum. For me, it's more important to like, let's look at the work and organize around it instead of looking at the people and getting their statuses. But when, so we do, what we do is we have like a swim lanes. So one swim lane is the expedite, the typical blocker on production. The second one is the sprint goal, all the stories that go into the sprint goal. And the third one is like everything else. And I get asked so many times, like, why would we even have everything else? If something is in the sprint goal, it should be done and that's it. We shouldn't even have something that's not to be done. And if that's the case, then people should just take it from a backlog that's organized. So
yeah, it's a very good question. So where does this come from, right? So basically the idea behind sprint goals is, of course, you can add 10 tickets to the sprint and you can say, we commit to finishing these 10 tickets. Mm-hmm. The big problem is when you do complex work, some of those tickets are going to be twice as big than you expected because there's something you missed. And what you often see, and as you know, right, like the velocity is 50, so we're going to plan 50. But it means you have no flexibility, right? Because in the end of the day, some of the tickets are actually not 5 story points, they're actually 13 story points. And then what happens is you don't have flexibility during the sprint because you have 10 tickets, you promise to complete 10 tickets, everybody will work really hard. And that's the big problem. Like when you do sprint planning, you can only do it based on what you know before starting the work. I call this the fog of beforehand, right? Like you're like in the dark, right? You only have limited vision, but every step you take, you will see more. You will see that there's a tree there. So I call this the fog of beforehand. And that's why before starting, you don't have enough information. And with the sprint goal, what you basically say is, so we have 10 tickets in the sprint, right? 5 of them relate to the sprint goal. It could be that we get lucky, right? And that all those 10 estimates are perfectly good and we can finish all tickets. Mm-hmm. But if it's more complicated than expected or we encounter problems, the main thing we promise to finish is the sprint goal. And the stuff which doesn't relate to the sprint goal, we're going to move it out because we're not going to make it. So how I always phrase it is, like, you can decide to add 10 tickets to the sprint, which means we're going to work very hard on those 10 tickets and you will not have control over what gets finished. Because everybody will be working on those 10 things. So the question becomes, what do you want? Do you want to have control over what gets finished or not? Right? That's kind of the question. But with the sprint goal, you basically say, this is the one thing that matters most. If stuff is more complicated than expected, this is what we're going to be focusing on. The other stuff is stretch goals. Like if we have enough time, we'll pick it up. But if we don't, the team can say, hey, we're not going to make it. And that's really important because companies that don't do that, they will try to finish the 10 tickets and you get technical debt. That's what's going to happen because people are going to rush to complete all 10 tickets, despite that it's more complicated than expected. And you get a lot of problems down the line, is my experience.
Okay, so plan for the unexpected and use the sprint goal as a help and a guide for the team. You know, when you were saying this, I just realized for as many years as we work and for all the experience that we have, we still somehow have this notion of the plan should be done.
Yeah.
And it should be done just as we plan. And like if you do, like, you know, in SAFe, they do quarterly plans and like very specific ones. Like, yeah, this should be done. This should be accomplished. Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? Every story that we wrote at the beginning, you think they will be done in 3 months, nothing will change.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And that's why, like, for example, in my book, I talk a lot about friction. So basically, in military warfare, there's this concept of friction. So in war, there's a lot of friction, which means your plans are not going to go as expected. Your actions, if you, for example, tell people to advance, they're not going to do it because they're scared, for example. And even if they do everything as expected, you cannot predict what the enemy does. So it's not going to have the expected results. And that's really important because that's the nature of complex work. You cannot predict all the steps. And if we're doing that, then all this making plans for 3 months is stupid. Sorry, like that's the way I'm putting it. So if we're doing complicated, right? The difference between complex and complicated is when you're doing complicated work, that means you can plan it if you have the right expertise in your teams. Like if you have the right expertise, then you can know what there is to know. You can make a pretty decent plan. There's going to be a little bit of friction, right? So stuff will go a little bit different than expected, but you could make a plan and you can reasonably well hit it. But when you're doing complex work, that's not the case. It's defined as we cannot predict everything we have to do. We do not know everything before we start. And that, I think, is the key difference. And people find it very difficult to understand complex versus complicated.
Yeah. Could you maybe, like, very in few words, I don't know if that's possible, explain a little bit the difference for those that don't know?
So if you look at the cinnamon framework, right, you have the simple domain, which is probably something like a game like tic-tac-toe, right? Like game like tic-tac-toe, I could tell you the rules and you can perfectly say if the opponent does this, you have to do that. Like there's always like the best course of action.
Like factory work, like for example, something that you just make a piece of something that's the same, like millions of other pieces.
Yeah, it's obvious what you need to do, basically. Mm-hmm. So when you're in the complicated space, it means the average person doesn't know exactly what they need to do. You need a certain expertise to decide like the right course of action. But you do know, you do have enough understanding. You do have enough if you have enough understanding and knowledge, like you can make the right decisions, or you can make really good decisions at least. When you do complex work, expertise doesn't matter. You simply don't know enough before starting. And that's a game like poker, maybe is a good example. Like what the opponent does, like every time they do something, you get more information. Every time there's another card on the table, you get more information. So that influences how you should act. Like everything, you get more information and then you need to change your strategy. It's not that you can say, I'm going to do a poker game and I will already know what I'm going to do every step of the way. No, that's not possible. Like you get more information when you're playing, like this person is bluffing or he has a certain tell. So that's a good example of complex, I think.
Okay, thank you. That's what I said. It's so great to talk with you because you give examples from real world to understand some complex things from what we do. And so I think that's one of the things that are like very important to understand, that we cannot stick with the plan above all, and that there is a necessity of making plans. But, you know, they are obsolete just the next day of making them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, for example, if you look at burndown charts, right? Another example. Burndown charts are supposed to be messy when you're doing complex work. Because when you're doing complex work, what's going to happen is you're going to do something and then you discover, oh, I didn't know that. So actually, it's more work, you know? So it's supposed to be messy. So what you often see is that people that believe they're doing complicated work, they actually start to think, unless we're below the ideal line, below the perfect burndown, like then we're doing a great job. And if we're above, we screwed up. Well, the fundamental problem is that has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the nature of the work. You didn't fill if the plan failed, right? It's supposed to fill because you don't have enough information to make the plan.
Well, that's also very important because there is a lot of, you know, like first time managers that do Scrum or Agile, it's new for them. And they just find this, I want velocity to be perfect. I want burndown to be perfect. I want the teams to be predictable. And it's like, this kind of metrics become the goal in itself because people think we are not doing well. And then recently we realized, like, okay, we are speeding up, we are getting more effective, but we are going in the wrong direction. We don't want that. So we are doing faster, stupid things, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the dangerous thing. Like following the plan becomes more important than meeting the objective. And that should never happen. Like you should always think about what are we trying to achieve? Where are we going? Where do we want to go? And that should be like leading. And many companies, that isn't the case.
And also, I think, you know, since you are like the product person, I used to be always the scrum person. None of us is a real developer or a designer person that actually like does the work. But I think sometimes we make also this mistake that those plans, those whys, why we do this, why we go this direction, all the customer interviews and so on are only in the hands of the leadership, you know, and the people that do their work is like, they don't need to know. They just need to, you know, move the ticket from start to done, right? Yeah. And then they, how can you make as like the simplest decision if you don't know what's the big picture, right?
So I think this generally starts kind of like with stakeholder management, which is really difficult. Like stakeholder management is probably one of the, I think, underrated aspects of doing Scrum or Agile well. I've had big successes. I've also had big failures. You know what I mean? It's very difficult to influence stakeholders because especially like we just talked about, right? If they believe that you can make a plan for 9 months and if they believe that failure to achieve that plan means that people are incompetent, right? Mm. Which is what you actually often see, then you're doomed from the start. And then what happens is what I've seen like really happen many times, like the first month, the first thing you pick up already takes twice as long as expected. And then the other 9 months, you're going to be late. You're going to be working your ass off, but nobody's going to be happy with you because you're late. Like nothing went as expected. And that I think is a sad thing. Like unless you can get your stakeholders to understand like, hey, we're doing complex work. We cannot predict everything. Like we cannot make a planning, long-term planning. It's just, of course you can make a planning, right? But it's likely it's going to be wrong. You need to get them into that mindset. And that's very, very difficult. But that's the first step, right? Because unless they understand that, you're going to be stuck with this long-term roadmap. And yeah, but for the rest, what you also see very often is they always talk about features because they hear a customer wants a Google Calendar integration or they want this or that. And then the team hears, we have to build this integration, but nobody knows why. And that I think is really important that you need to understand, like whenever I get such a request, I actually go talk to the customer and ask them, how do you work at the moment? How do you solve this problem at the moment? Because the thing is, when you ask customers what they want, they start talking about features, they start talking about wishes. But the problem is, for example, if you ask people, is the environment important? Everybody will say yes, right? But if you ask them, how many times do you fly around the world? You know, then you need to put your money where your mouth is. You see how they actually act. And that's it's often far more reliable if you just ask, how do they do it at the moment? Than saying like, what do you think is important? Or how would you wish to do it? Because then it often becomes wishful thinking.
Yeah, and they give you a solution without you understanding the problem first.
Exactly. And then you can never validate it. Like then it's like, okay, we're going to deliver the Google Calendar integration. And then when it's done. We don't know what it does. We don't know if the customer's happy, but it's done.
Exactly. Yeah. I see that a lot. I think what you said is very important. It's the stakeholder management and also understanding that people who do the work, they also have an expertise and they are intelligent and smart people that might have great ideas if we just let them understand why they are there, right? And if we use I think sometimes it feels like we have such a great potential of minds together as a company, and we just use like we talk about the brain sometimes, there's like 3% of that potential because we think those people, they should just do the work. They shouldn't be giving opinions about the work.
You're spot on. And if you look, for example, at Patrick Lencioni's work, The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, actually, if you look at the top, right, the pyramid, which very few teams achieve, it's about results, right? Like that people pay attention to results. Like what are we trying to achieve? But you can only achieve that if there's at the bottom psychological safety, right? People can take risks, but they also understand what are we trying to achieve here? And I think that's crucial because products are never built by one person. Like the Steve Jobs that has a vision and then everybody does what he says, that's a lie. That's not how it works. Like you need all these different kind of disciplines to come together to build a product like the iPhone or the iPod. And you need all these different perspectives. And unless everybody can challenge each other, right, in a good way, like, is there a simpler way of doing it? Like why? I mean, this kind of friction, you know, like constructive friction, let's put it that way, I think is really important. Like if what we're doing is not valuable, I expect, or people believe it's not valuable, I expect developers to kind of challenge me, like, is this really that valuable? Is it really necessary? But the other way around, if developers give an estimate and it's a lot of months and it's much more than I expect, I will try to understand what makes it so difficult. Like maybe we can move it out of scope, or maybe they're already thinking too much about the future, right? That we're going to have 1 million users. So yeah, I think this tension, like managing this tension, is super important and gets the best results. But yeah, if you don't do that, then they're just going to do what they think is good without considering the big picture.
Yeah, I agree. It's like this constructive disagreement, right?
Yes.
And you can read about it in the agile teams, a lot of books that talk about how people collaborate best. So before we finish, we don't have much time, and I still have two topics to talk. So first one is going back to the sprint goals in their on its own. I tell you, I always see a list. So there's never one, and and sometimes people just don't know how to write it. So they just basically finish or complete the work on this, do the something that. So I would like to understand if there's like a small framework or any help how to write a sprint goal that's meaningful.
So I actually came up with Focus based on my experience working with sprint goals. So it's kind of like invest for user stories, Focus is for sprint goals. So it's like a checklist so that you can check how good is your sprint goal. So the F stands for fun, right? And fun maybe is the wrong word. It maybe would be better to say memorable, like have a name so that people can drop it during the sprint. For example, an example of a sprint goal was show me the money because we did something finance related. So it makes it a bit fun, right? And then everybody, because the problem is if you make it smart, right? Increase conversion by 2%, blah, blah, blah. Everybody's bored. Nobody's going to talk about it. It's just too factual. Like we are emotional creatures. We need a bit of storytelling. And this just really helps. And it could also be like a title, like Project Phoenix. Like I worked on a project that was called that way. It doesn't matter, but at least that there's this hook so that people talk about it, because people are not going to talk about a sentence which is this long because it needs to be smart. For the rest, it needs to be outcome oriented. So what are we trying to achieve? Mm-hmm. Why does it matter? The C stands for collaborative. Like we need to make it together because then it's the product of the whole team. Everybody understands it. It needs to be singular. The S stands for singular, right? So it needs to be one thing and not more than that, because otherwise when stuff goes wrong, and there are two things or three things, they're going to ask questions. So what is more important, one, two, or three? So it preferably one. I understand sometimes you have like a couple of things. That's also reality, right? And why, right? The ultimate reason, why do we do this? Like that's really important, because the outcome is not enough. Like you also need to understand the why. So that's the U of ultimate. So focus can really help you to check. I've also written some articles where I actually gave some examples of sprint goals I used in the past. So yeah, maybe I can send you the links, but
yes, please. Yeah, I think that would be useful, because that's the thing. Like people think if we have a goal should be smart. It's like by default. But what you are explaining about the fun part, I think this also applies to the OKRs, right? When you create the O from the OKRs, the objective, they should be memorable. They should be fun. They should be something that is like a tagline of a product that you are advertising, right? That want this it's easy, like we want, it's motivating, it's fun, we want to know it, and we
people should talk about it, they should drop it. And the reality is most of the time it's boring, it's too long, it doesn't stay in your head. So the moment you ask somebody how's that OKR doing, everybody thinks, what is the OKR? I don't even know it, you know what I mean, from the top of my head. So I think this label, so you still need to of course be smart, right? I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but you need to have a label so that you can, like, you can talk about the label and everybody knows about, okay, this is what this label means.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. I think we covered quite a lot of things that I see as problems in the teams. And just before we go, I have the one last question. When is the book coming out?
It's coming out somewhere next year, first half of next year. It's now being, as they say, formally reviewed. So I've got formal reviewers. So
those people that then leave quotes on the cover, right?
Sometimes there are also other people that can sometimes give quotes, but depending on the feedback, right? It also depends. Mm-hmm. Of course, I already had informal reviewers, so I'm hoping there won't be any huge feedback that I need to rewrite everything. But the reality is I'm aiming for next year, and I'm super excited about the book because it's a lot of storytelling. And that I think makes it kind of different than most Scrum and Agile books. And it's really about sprint goals and how it, so here's what I'm hoping for. Like when the book is out, someone who just starts with Scrum reads it and has a really deep understanding of Scrum, and somebody already is working with Scrum takes a little bit and they're like, oh, I didn't look at it this way. And so that's my aim. Like, how do you deliver more value with Scrum? That's actually what the book is about. Yeah, it's about sprint goals, but it's about much more than that.
I love that you have a user story for your own book.
Yeah.
And just before we finish, can you say like what have been your biggest challenges with writing a book? Because this is also like a totally different subject, but it's interesting given that you have been a prolific writer. So you write a lot. You write every day probably.
Yeah.
How was it?
So I think the main difference, so for me personally, writing a book is facing your own shortcomings. And shortcomings are very broad in the sense that I became a father, right? So I had another kid. So there was a lack of time. So that's one element. But apart from that, what I've noticed is I'm really good at short-term results. Like I can, like in a few hours, I can write an article of 5 pages. The problem with writing a book is every chapter needs to relate to a bigger whole, and every chapter needs to fit with each other. So when you write one thing, it impacts another thing. There needs to be a red line. It's really daunting. It's really scary. Like you get stuck in, I got stuck in my head. Like I even were moments where I was thinking like, I cannot write a book. Like I'm incapable of it. I just don't have it in me. Like it's really difficult. Like, yeah, because you're like, yeah, I can write an article of 5 pages. But writing a book is, kind of like the difference between making a small statue, right? Or making like a huge, this is a poor comparison, but anyhow, it's very difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. But that's great. You know, I think it's helpful for anyone who is thinking ever about writing a book and thinking like, it's not for me. I'm like, probably all authors go through that at some point. And yet you managed, you have the book in the oven. We can wait for it to get.
The only thing that still can happen, always can happen, is the publisher says it's shit, we're not going to publish it. That can always happen, right? But I'm not worried about finishing it. Like now I have zero worries, but that's only because many times I thought I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to make it. So I guess that's normal, unless I'm an exception.
Well, anyway, whatever happens, you have it. You wrote it, right? And you can even publish it on your own in
Correct.
The worst case
Correct.
Scenario. So that's great accomplishment. So I congratulate you on that. Can't wait to see the book and to read it. It would be great. It would be great for anyone who is struggling, not only with sprint goals, but I imagine that with Scrum and Agile altogether, right?
Yeah. I actually try to explain Agile without talking about waterfall because I'm tired of all the waterfall explanations. So,
wow. Yeah. That is a big challenge. Awesome. Thank you so much. It was great. I love your stories and I love talking to you for the first time ever.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. And I hope maybe one day I can come back.
Yeah, I really hope that because I have, as I said before we started, I have so many topics I would love to talk to you about because for anyone who doesn't know Martin, you talk about so many things like beating the feature factory, why it's important to do Scrum, but not to like focus too much on Scrum itself. And so many things about product management that I would really like to pick your brains about other subjects too.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a great Bye-bye. Day. Thank you.